Our topic tonight is equanimity. You know, isn't that a funny word, equanimity? It's not a word, you know, it's not a word that you hear too much here and there around in daily life. No, in spiritual circles you might hear it, but it's generally not a it's not a word that's in common usage. I don't know how much you're using that word at work. I had some equanimity yesterday. But really it's pointing to a kind of ease. So there's different ways to think of this. It could be like a sense of ease or okayness, steadiness, balance. There are metaphors that can help us understand this word. The metaphor of being like a mountain. It's not that you are a mountain, but it's like being a mountain where there's a kind of steadiness where the seasons come and go and the weather comes and goes and the snow piles up and then the snow melts away and the animals come and go. So the steadiness of a mountain. It also, another metaphor that we sometimes hear is about the sky. You think about a big Montana sky, how it's so open and vast. The clouds will come and go, and the weather comes and goes. And then the sense of spaciousness, like that sky metaphor, is a sense of spaciousness. That sense of not being cramped or closed in, but we can unfurl ourselves within that space. Sometimes equanimity can show up as a kind of neutrality, which makes it a little invisible. It could be invisible at times. We might not even notice it's there. Like, sometimes this is a totally silly example, like, but say some days a spider comes and you really hate spiders. But you're not balanced, you're not too bugged by the spider that day. You know the spider's there and you know you don't like the spider, but it's okay. It's not that big a deal. And that is a kind of equanimity. It's a kind of steadiness within the spider showing up. And whatever that might be in your life is the spider that shows up. And that sense of steadiness, sometimes we might not even notice it's there, or later we might reflect and be like, oh yeah, I was pretty steady about that thing that sometimes would totally throw me off. So I was talking to someone last weekend about this quality of equanimity. I was actually giving a short retreat on equanimity. And she was saying how she had been at work for a period of the last 2 to 3 years. There's a lot of drama at work, and there was so much work to do, and this person, like there was always fires to be put out, and this needed to happen, and there was always a lot of work and a lot of stress. And then there was a lot of change at her work, and some people shifted, and there was calm at work. And it took her a while to feel okay with it. It was almost unsettling, that sense of calm or ease or okayness. Sometimes we might not even notice or feel comfortable with a sense of calm or ease or okayness because we're not so familiar with it. And if we were in person, I would ask you, and I would love to hear, what is your experience of steadiness? What is your experience of equanimity? How do you experience it? Do you experience it like a big sky, or do you experience it like a mountain? I would just be so curious. Maybe at the end, if there's time, I can hear from you all. So you might have heard so many times that the Buddhist practice and teaching, so the Dharma, which is the Buddhist practice and teaching, is like a bird that's flying. It's like it's a bird that's flying, or we're the bird that's flying to freedom. And a bird has two wings. Without both wings, a bird can't fly. So the two wings of wisdom and compassion. And we could think of equanimity, this quality of equanimity, as being the hinge point, as being the hinge point between wisdom and compassion. So wisdom sees that everything's impermanent. Wisdom sees the patterns of our lives. Wisdom sees that steadiness actually can serve us well in our own awakening. And then compassion, this other wing, compassion is one of the heart qualities, right? The heart that's open with suffering Equanimity is in the list of Brahma Viharas. Equanimity shows up, this word equanimity shows up in many different Buddhist lists. It's kind of exciting that it shows up in so many places. But it does show up importantly in the list of the Brahma Viharas, are the four heart qualities. So equanimity is an open-heartedness. It's not, sometimes we might be confused and think that it's like we don't care or we're aloof, but it's actually a warm-hearted caring, a warm-hearted. So it's in this category of compassion and appreciative joy and friendliness and equanimity. We have these four Brahma Viharas. So this bird of awakening has wisdom and has compassion. So it's the hinge point. Equanimity would be the hinge point between the two. So there are two different words that get translated as equanimity. So the texts are written, the Buddhist texts are written in Pali, and there are two different Pali words that get translated as equanimity. One is upekkha, which means to look over. And the other word, I'm going to try and pronounce it. We'll see how that goes. The other word, tatra mahajhatata, which also gets translated as equanimity, means to stand in the middle of. So we have these two different words that, two different Pali words that show up in different places that both get translated as equanimity. One being to look over, and one being is to stand in the middle of. And we could think about equanimity, and our understanding of equanimity might strengthen if we put these two words together, where we're seeing the bigger picture, looking over things, seeing the bigger picture, and standing right in the middle of it all, right in the middle of your life. So the first one, upekkha, which means to look over, it's the power of observation. It's the power of seeing the bigger picture, seeing with understanding, and to see with patience. Oh, I think that's really beautiful, to see with patience. I was talking to some other people. It's one of the benefits of teaching a lot on the same topic is I get to learn so much from different people. And I was speaking with someone on Wednesday evening, and she was saying that there's a situation in her life that came up with a close friend of hers that really was difficult for her and didn't sit well. But instead of rushing in to try and fix it and figure it out, she was going to take some patience and just give it some time to unfold. And it didn't mean that she wouldn't necessarily speak what needs to be spoken at some point, but it did mean that she was just going to wait and see with some patience. So equanimity does have this aspect of patience embedded in it. And we can remember that this quality of the heart, which is open and engaged. So to see over, we can see over. I have some close friends that I've known for more than two decades, and their daughter is 20. I was walking with her maybe a couple of weeks ago and talking with her about equanimity. And I caught such a sense of seeing her life, seeing this young woman at 20, and how when she was a baby, I used to carry her around or go on hikes with her mom. And then when she was maybe 3 or 4 years old, she peed on my kitchen floor. She wet her pants on my kitchen floor. And maybe even as old as 5, although her parents didn't remember that, but I have a clear memory. And then, you know, a little later, when she was 7 or 8, she loved a hula hoop. And I would always be like, do hula hoops together. And then when she got a little older, she had her bat mitzvah at 13, and she was so beautiful. She actually sang. She sang publicly, and she was just so beautiful. And then when she got a little older in high school, she had this whole service project where she organized kids from her school to make a service trip to India, and they did the fundraising for it. And then at the pandemic, she came to visit me with her not yet boyfriend, and he became her first boyfriend. And now A couple of years later, they're breaking up. And I just love this sense, right, of seeing over her life. And there's so much warmth in my feeling and love for her, but I'm also not as deeply involved as her parents, right? Like there's a sense of ease, and I can see the patterns of her life. I'm not going to hold her to peeing on my kitchen floor at 5. I'm not going to hold her to who she was at 15. She gets to change. And in this way, when we have this quality of equanimity, we allow ourselves to change. We allow our loved ones to change. And there's warmth, but there's a kind of a remembrance of the bigger picture of the life cycles, how things expand, things contract, our lives expand, our lives contract. We have pleasure, we lose things. So the equanimity allows us with great love to hold the bigger picture, to see, right? To look over. So when we look over, sometimes it can totally change. When we see the bigger picture or we look over, it can totally change our entire lives. There are a lot of astronauts when they first started going into space. The astronauts first started going into space and seeing the Earth from space, how it was life-changing. It's called the overview effect. It's a cognitive shift that affects some astronauts when they see the Earth from space. And then what happens for many of the astronauts when they see, when they have that looking over, that bigger picture. They no longer, for many of them, they no longer identify with a specific nationality or culture, but instead see themselves and all citizens as citizens on Earth, as one people living on one world. This is a beautiful metaphor how, with equanimity, when we look over, we see the bigger picture, it can shift things for us. So, this is a quote from Edgar Mitchell. He was the sixth man on the moon. That's still really boggling to me, right? That somebody got to stand on the moon. That's really awesome. But this is a quote from him. He said, "There was a startling recognition that the nature of the universe was not as I had been taught. I not only saw the connectedness, I felt it." This is an insight. He says, "I was overwhelmed with the sensation of physically and mentally extending out into the cosmos. I realized that this was a biological response of my brain attempting to reorganize and give meaning to information about the wonderful and awesome processes that I was privileged to view." So when we see clearly the nature of how things are, we will have insight. It will change our life. There might be some ease or okayness or steadiness, this quality of equanimity. So, this other aspect of equanimity, which is to stand in the middle of, this other word that gets translated into equanimity literally translates as to stand in the middle of. I always think of this as being like when we stand at the ocean, when you're standing in the ocean and you're in the waves, but not super deep in, and the waves come and they kind of batter you, and you can feel the strength of the waves, but you're able to hold steady. Like we can feel the strength of life and we kind of get rocked a little bit, but that staying steady in the middle of that, standing it right in the middle of all of it, standing in the middle of your life. This is a kind of inner strength. It's a kind of confidence. I think about how the teachings of equanimity are teaching me, well, this is a little bit of a tangent, but teaching me that my actions, really my actions lead to my happiness or unhappiness. It's not about wishing myself happy, but it's actually about what I do. And in the same way, your actions are leading to your happiness or unhappiness. We follow the dharmic path. We practice integrity. We practice loving kindness. It leads to greater ease and it leads to greater steadiness. So that your life is your responsibility. My life is mine. My husband's life is his. I can't live his life for him, even if I think he should make different decisions. I can't. right? We learn this about each other. We each get our own life with our own lessons. And there's a kind of confidence when we stand right in the middle of our life and learn through the practice of the Buddha Dharma to make choices that are onward leading. This is a kind of inner strength and inner confidence. It's also pointing to this translation of the word, which means to stand in the middle, is pointing to our own sense of well-being, our own sense of well-being and ease. So here's another Dharma question for you, which is, what supports your own ease and well-being? Do you take time to develop your own sense of well-being? I would say yes, because here you are on Sunday night, even though the Warriors are playing on the TV. Well, they're playing in life, but they're on the TV. Here you are in a Dharma group. So what are things that you do to help you take time to develop your own sense of ease and well-being so that you can navigate, so that the waves of life don't knock you over, so that you're able to hold steady? So maybe it's the ritual of enjoying your glass of tea or your mug of tea in the morning. What are other ways that you find calm to improve your resiliency, to improve your capacity to meet challenges? How do you find your own inner strength? Do you walk in nature? Do you meditate? See, I have so many different things listening to Dharma talks. You know, when we're practicing, to use another metaphor, when we're practicing balancing, so standing on one foot, which is a really good thing to practice as we age. I don't know if you've noticed that our balance gets, in general, humans' balance gets a little more wobbly as we age. It's a thing that's happening. And you know, a lot of you might know this. I do teach yoga asana too. And I love teaching balancing poses because there's such a great metaphor here. How when we're doing balance, whether you're just brushing your teeth on one foot to practice your balance, or whether you're in a yoga asana class, but you don't have to be in a yoga asana class to practice your balance. It could be any time. And the metaphor is, when we're doing something, when we're standing on one foot and we're balancing, we're not fixed. We're not rigid. Actually, the body sways a little bit to accommodate. The standing ankle will move a little bit to accommodate. So this quality that I'm talking about of equanimity is steady, but it's not rigid. It's responsive to the changing conditions. It's alive. So confidence, we live our own lives and not someone else's. And we're working with our practice towards greater and greater responsiveness through the practice of mindfulness. So you can also talk about this as greater and greater choice. So rather than being a victim to our reactions to the eight worldly winds that blow through our life, the gain and the loss, the praise and the blame. There's so many, so maybe even today, maybe even during your meditation, that half hour meditation, there was maybe a whole bunch of stuff happening. And instead of being reactive, our mindfulness allows us to practice holding steady so that we can be choiceful in what we say, choiceful in what we choose to do, rather than just being reactive all day, pinging from one thing to the next, which sometimes it feels like that, yes, in life. It feels like we're pinging around. But the confidence that arises when we learn to hold steady when the waves of life are coming, and this inner sense of okayness. Now, I know for sure that your life has had many ups and downs. I know this because you are a human being. I know this, and you're here. You're here now. You're okay. This is pointing you towards your own confidence, your own capacity. Now, of course, stuff has happened, and I'm sure you weren't always the most graceful person. Maybe you were, but probably not always. But still, you're here. You've met all the challenges that have happened. You're here. You're alive. You have made it thus far, even with all of your challenges. So equanimity is an aspect of mindfulness. You know, when we sit down to meditate, we're practicing holding steady. which is another way to talk about equanimity, a holding steady. We're practicing in the meditation. I sometimes love to open my eyes and look around at people that are meditating because everybody looks so peaceful. But then when I start to hear what's happening for people, I understand, right? So much can happen. Even in a 5-minute meditation, so much can happen. And one of the things we're practicing in our meditation is that practicing just staying, not waiting for the perfect meditation, not waiting for the perfect life. If you're waiting for everything to line up exactly perfect, you'll be waiting a long time. And then when it does happen, it's going to shift because everything is impermanent. So our mindfulness practice, our meditation practice is an opportunity to learn to stay. Anxiety is like this, and busy mind is like this, and grief is like this, and steadiness is like this, or whatever is here. We're just staying. We're sitting together in our sangha, in our community. We sit together in our humanness, and we practice staying steady. So when mindfulness is strengthened, equanimity strengthens too, that they come together. We think of mindfulness as being this non-reactive, non-judgmental state of mind, which is another way of talking about equanimity, non-reactive, non-judgmental, just open. And like that big Montana sky, find your own inner Montana. So we can rest in our meditation. We can rest into awareness and rest into the flow of knowing rather than the need for meditation to be a certain way. So, and mindfulness is a part of Vipassana. So what we do when we're doing mindfulness meditations, we're doing Vipassana, which is practicing seeing clearly. And that's pointing us back to that first translation of the word, which is to see, right? Like to see over. So doing our mindfulness is a part of Vipassana, to see clearly, to look over. And what are we seeing? We're seeing that all things change. We are seeing impermanence. So Ajahn Suchito, a Western man who's been a monk for a long time, 40 or 50 years at least, maybe longer. He said, the realization that the world is a passing thing that does not own us. So he's talking about equanimity being the realization that the world is a passing thing that does not own us. So there's no need to run and nothing to shut off. So sometimes we think in meditation, we might mistakenly think that everything should be quiet and calm in order for us to be a good meditator or in order for it to be a good meditation. But so often the difficult sits, the difficult meditations, the difficult periods in our life teach us the capacity to stay steady. The difficult meditations teach us to hold ourselves in a field of attention that's curious and unbiased, and that we can look over the impermanence of arising sensations. So our okayness is not, it's not dependent on things being to our preference. So last weekend when I was teaching a short little retreat on this topic, on ease, on equanimity, there was a man who was here and he was doing some reclining meditation. And afterwards he said, oh, my back was hurting and my head was hurting, but I was okay. It wasn't my preference to have a backache or a headache, but I was still okay. And he said he still felt some gratitude too. And I thought that was really beautiful. This understanding that we don't need everything to be perfect to be okay. Like we can be okay anyway. And then I have a neighbor. He's in a lot of pain. He's got chronic pain, this and that injury, this and that. Something's always bothering him. And he's elderly, and I go over and visit him. He's an elder, and I go over and visit him, and I ask him, I'm like, how are you doing? And he's like, well, It's like everything hurts really badly, but I wake up in the morning and I thank God that I woke up in paradise. And I just think that's so beautiful, that sense of that we can be grateful that we don't need things to line up. And that is equanimity. If I asked him, he wouldn't know what that word is. He wouldn't know what equanimity is, but that's a kind of equanimity. He would prefer not to have a backache. I'm sure you would too, prefer not to have a backache or a shoulder ache or a hip ache. But still, he'd wake up in paradise. I think he woke up in paradise because it's so beautiful where we are in Mendocino. And then with this understanding that we can be okay in the midst of everything, that leads to confidence in our own capacity to meet challenge, to meet dukkha, to meet difficulty. And that's strengthening. So something else about mindfulness that can really support our equanimity. So mindfulness of vedana. Do you know this word? I think a lot of you probably do know this word. Vedana means feeling tone. So when we sit down to meditate, the Buddha taught the four foundations of mindfulness. He taught four establishments or four areas to pay attention to when we sit down to meditate. The second area or the second category of experience to notice, the second category of experience to look over when we are practicing mindfulness is the experience of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. So everything, this one took me forever to understand. So if this is new to you, don't worry about it. If it's not new to you, don't worry about it. This one took a while. I thought it was confusing. We all learn at our own pace. So at any rate, everything that you experience, you take a drink of water, you see something, you hear something, you taste something, you think something. Every time there's a moment of experience, it comes with a tone or valence. So, I put a piece of chocolate in my mouth for me, maybe not for you, but it's a pleasant experience. I keep putting chocolate in my mouth. Eventually, it turns neutral, and then eventually, it turns to unpleasant. Don't ask me how I know. So, every bit of experience has pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. And if we start to notice that when there's pleasant, we reach for it. And if we notice often, not always, if something's pleasant, you have a pleasant experience, the mind, the heart wants it more, or something's unpleasant, and the mind starts to push it away. The Buddha taught us to notice this so that we can start letting go of that reactivity and holding steady. I hope that makes sense. So every moment, and when we're practicing meditation, we can start to notice this. There could be pleasant, there could be unpleasant, or something that's neither, right? It's not really pleasant. It's not really unpleasant. It's kind of neutral. And when we're practicing mindfulness, we're beginning to watch how the heart and mind reacts to these different feeling tones or vedanas or valences. And so when we see the pattern, here's that. Seeing, there's that looking over again. When we see the pattern, what happens? The mind will naturally start to let go of that reactivity and be steady. So, bringing in the second meaning, being steady to stand in the midst of life with its pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral experiences. So, equanimity is an even-minded acceptance of yourself and others. We can tune into where we are. We can tune into where we are. We can tune into where the people around us are, up or down, expanded or contracted. We can tune into that without it changing the general empathy or goodwill for yourself or for others. Like, oh, whatever it is happening. Somebody comes into your field of attention we don't have to take it so personally. Somebody's not doing so well, or we're not doing so well. We don't have to take it so personally. We can keep a sense of evenness there, a sense of general empathy and goodwill for self and others, no matter what the state. Whatever you are going through right now in your life or in your meditation, it will change. We can trust in our own and our loved ones' capacity to pass through the different phases of life. Just like when I was watching my friend's daughter grow up, and she passed through stages. And we think of children, we can see that quite clearly as children growing into adulthood, that passing through different phases. But we do that as adults too. We pass through different phases, and we can pass through different phases even in all in one day. So we can, with this quality of bearing witness, of equanimity, of open-hearted attention, we can begin to trust our own and our loved ones' capacity to pass through these different phases. This is a deep respect for others. It is a deep respect for ourselves, and is a deep respect for others' autonomy and our own autonomy. It bears in mind the bigger picture of seeing or looking over the landscape of our lives. It brings together the two aspects of equanimity, this aspect of looking over our seeing and then standing in the middle, standing right in the middle of your life. And it supports our own confidence and okayness. And most importantly, this quality of equanimity, it supports our own awakening. As I've been practicing and studying equanimity for the past 6 weeks or so, I keep finding little places where it's mentioned that in a lot of the early texts, that equanimity and awakening are used interchangeably. And I think that's really interesting that those are used interchangeably, those two words. But at any rate, this quality of equanimity can be strengthened by paying attention to it, to notice, right? That quality of mindfulness, noticing when you are feeling steady and finding ways to support your own well-being so that you have the capacity to see the changes, to look over, to see the bigger picture, and you have the capacity to stand in the middle of your life. All right, loves, that's what I have for you. Let's just take a little pause and let yourself settle a bit into your seat so you can feel the chair, whatever you're sitting on, feel that contact. And I had two questions for you, and we have a couple moments for discussion. So I'd love to hear. In part, it's quite self-serving because I'll learn from you. But I want to know, what is your experience of equanimity or ease or okayness or steadiness? What is your experience of that? How do you feel that? How does it show up for you? And then the other question, which I would love to hear about, is how do you take care of your own well-being? How do you support your own inner well-being? All right, and then you can open your eyes if they were closed, and we'll see. I think if you want to speak, you could unmute yourself, and then I could hopefully see you unmuted, or you could raise your hand on the chat function. That's our raise your hand. Oh, I see Deborah. Go ahead, Deborah, unmute yourself. I'd like to hear. From you.
You just said something I wanted to remember. I will answer your question, but you said something about, oh my God, being respectful of each other. I think you were reading from a quote, and I had to lay down so I didn't have my pen and paper, but could you say it again?
Yeah, so this is about how we begin with equanimity to trust our own and our loved one's capacity to pass through all the different phases of life.
Right.
Yeah. And it's a kind of deep respect for others and our own autonomy. Is that what you were looking for?
Yes, deep respect. Respect for each other's autonomy and your own. And your question about how do I find equanimity? I love that you talked about this because this has been my latest thing lately. I think I shared that once before in Sangha. And what I'm doing is practicing self-compassion and self-acceptance. And that is allowing me some equanimity. So that even if I say or do something that I then think, oy, not so wise, not so skillful, wish I had taken a breath. It's in my heart chakra. I feel this sense of ease or peace or liberation or freedom in my heart area. And to me, that's equanimity. So even though maybe it felt good in the minute and then I felt a little regretful, you know, the pleasant and unpleasant, I can get back to, you know, you were saying earlier on, we're accepting the moment and we're accepting change. So I'm working on accepting that I did the best I could in this nanosecond, and that allows greater ease. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Deborah. So you're bringing out something that like self-compassion and self-acceptance buoys, I don't know how you say that, brings up your equanimity. So this, these are the Brahma Viharas that we're talking about, and they like weave together loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity. They weave together and they strengthen each other. So I love that in your experience, finding some self-compassion and self-acceptance is actually supporting equanimity. That's beautiful. That's what the teachings say, but that you have the experience of it. So that's really wonderful. Thank you. That's also why I read that poem. I was thinking about the poem at the end of the meditation. And I was like, gosh, it's not exactly about equanimity, but it is where she's talking about, it starts, release the harsh and pointed inner voice. Let go of self-judgment, the old learned ways of beating yourself up for each imagined inadequacy. Allow the dialogue within the mind to grow friendlier and quiet. Shift out of inner criticism and life suddenly looks very different. And then the end, so the last little bit of the poem is, love, not judgment, sows the seeds of tranquility and change. So it's really beautiful. Thank you. Anybody else have anything? Yeah, go ahead, Nancy. Just unmute yourself, Nancy. I'd love to hear from you.
You know, as you spoke, Ashley, I thought about, you know, it seems to me like there's two kinds of equanimity. One is the kind you described about your young friend. And for me, thinking of the image of the big mountain or the big sky, my love for my daughter is absolutely, throughout the course of her life, equanimous, regardless of what she does. So that's one kind of equanimity. But in terms of my own experiences of equanimity, those come and go. I've had, you know, moments of equanimity. I've had a lot more moments of non-equanimity. They're lovely when they happen. There are things, there are causes and conditions which have contributed to them, to the absence and the presence of. But to me, as you spoke, it seems to me like there's two kinds of equanimity. One is the, you know, I almost thought of the word God as you talked about it, kind of a concept of God, you know, ever present, never changing. That's love for me, at least in my experience. But then there's another kind, which is the kind that comes and goes. That's an experience that comes and goes. So I just wanted to
Yeah, that's really beautiful. You know, I'm working with this book right now called Boundless Heart by Christina Feldman. And it's on these four qualities. And she, this is related to what you're saying. We'll see if it helped or if it's that related. But anyway, she talks about these four qualities and she talks about them as not being necessarily experiences, but they're a way of approaching. So this is why I really love the phrases too, because with the phrases, with the equanimity phrases or the loving kindness phrases, we're turning our mind. It's like we're turning the mind's intention towards how we're approaching our life, because the feeling is going to come and go because we're human and we have the brain and the different causes and conditions. So we're using the power of with the phrases or developing the intention of approaching everything with this quality of equanimity or the other three Brahma Viharas. I think that's a really interesting thing to think about. I'd have to think about it a little more. And I just like to think about it a little more about like the difference between the feeling of it, because you're right, the feeling does come and go, and the intention of it and the aspect of keep coming back again and again to the development of this wise intention, really, the development of metta. And then I see somebody chatted. Let's see what that says. Somebody else is saying the two types as well. Yeah, I think that's common. I know there's a book by Norman Fisher called Training in Compassion, and he talks in this book, and it's not to him, but it's where I've most experienced this. He's talking about relative compassion and absolute compassion, this relative this sort of everyday and absolute. So I think what people are saying, I think it's out there. It's, you're not alone in that experience for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Nancy, for sharing. We have time, I think, for one more, and then we'll do the metta. Anybody else? Yeah. Barbara, go ahead.
Yeah, I really appreciated your comment about seeing equanimity as the big picture, because lately I felt a lot of dukkha about, you know, what's been going on in this country. You know, I mean, the shootings and the greed, and, you know, and the news. Yeah. And I suddenly realized, well, this dukkha, there's got to be a better way of looking at this too, because it's not helping just to feel all this dukkha. So I took a step back and just thought about, okay, I belong to a species that has to deal with the knowledge of its own death, and everybody is suffering. And whether you're a psycho killer or you're Putin or whatever, and I just was able to sort of look at this bigger picture of, my God, you know, and just having that, being able to get into a more compassionate feeling, at least temporary, and get out of the dukkha of, oh my God, you know, this nation is, you know, not democratic, blah, 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 which is true and which needs to be addressed. But to be able to have that big picture gave me equanimity.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I have a friend who's like a poli science professor at a university. And especially when Trump first got elected, it was really helpful to talk to her because she could talk about the larger cycles in this country and the world. And so like that, seeing the bigger picture can really help us remember that what it is to be a human and that we go through these cycles. And then something else you said, this is not what I heard in your comment at all, but it just reminded me that I would like to remind everybody, because it's really common. I do this. I've heard a lot of people talk about this, where something's happening. And there's this, like, I just really need to get some of that equanimity. I wish I could just have some of that equanimity. It's like we're going to go to the shopping mall, except for it's not the shopping mall, it's the Dharma Hall, and get some of it. We'll purchase some of that equanimity. And when that's happening, more times than not, what we really need is compassion practice. We need to hold our heart. So even actually in your comment, Barbara, you said, oh, I had some dukkha. So then you're addressing the dukkha instead of like jumping over ourselves, that these four qualities, the four heart qualities, sometimes when there is suffering, that the compassion is the appropriate response. So we could think of the four qualities as being the different aspects of the same awakened heart. And when the awakened heart meets the changing conditions, the different qualities might arise depending on the circumstance. So if you find yourself thinking you need to get some equanimity, check in and see if maybe you need a little compassion. And of course we need equanimity, but we also need compassion, and that they strengthen each other and they support each other.